Let me start, please. Good evening and welcome to this event for the mayoral candidates, which has been run by the London Civic Forum and the Centre for Civil Society at LSE. Can I just ask one practical thing first? We have two signers here. Can I ask if there's anybody who needs signing, in which case are they able to see the signer, or is there somewhere else that it would be better for them to go? Is there anybody who needs a signer? Doesn't look like it. No? Okay. Thank you. The second thing we have to say is that, as people will have seen or heard probably from the news today, London has been accepted as one of the candidate cities for the Olympic bid. You may well clap, but this has enormous ramifications for this meeting tonight, which means that two of the candidates, Ken Livingstone and Steve Norris, have to actually leave at 20 past seven in order to be at an event which is about that. However, there are two people who are going to be coming in and taking their place, so as we all have all the candidates represented. Simon Hughes and Darren Johnson also have to leave about 8 o'clock, and I think they also are going to have people coming up and taking part in the debate. So I'm sorry about that, but this is just one of those things in trying to fit everything into a very busy schedule. The point of tonight's meeting was to specifically discuss the role of civil society in London and how Londoners can get involved in civil society and what the views of the candidates are on that. And we have a whole series of questions to do with that coming along. But what we're going to do is to ask the candidates to start off with a maximum of 4 minutes each with their opening statements. And the candidates have all kindly agreed that Ken Livingstone and Steve Norris can go first because they have to leave earlier. So I'm going to start by inviting Ken Livingstone to address us.
Well, thanks very much. My apologies for this rotation you're going to have. It's a bit like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and we'll be replaced by pod people. Let me start by saying that I think the first thing you require about engaging in civil society is that people have the information on which to base a judgment. And in that case, we haven't got a chance, because most people in London, if they are looking in the newspapers or turning on the television or the radio, wouldn't have a clue that there's an election on, particularly for a body which has £9 billion of your money to spend, employs indirectly 100,000 people, is responsible for transport and policing, and moving in many other areas where it's overused its influence. And I have to say, I think so far, the media have disgracefully misserved Londoners in not actually ensuring there's a really intense debate. And I do hope that is going to change shortly. I was very encouraged by the spontaneous response to our winning the Olympics, because I do think London is a city that's moved from 15 years or so ago from being a place that was declining, frankly, to one that is now growing strongly. It's the youngest part of Britain. 72% of all the natural growth in population in England and Wales is here in this one city. It's why we've got 600,000 more people than we had in 1989, and we're likely to have another 700,000 by the middle of the next decade. And people are coming from around the world, both asylum seekers at one end, fleeing oppression and arriving just with the clothes on their back, but also great corporations coming here because they feel this is an exciting city and a safe city and a city which celebrates its diversity. Of all the things that make me proudest about being mayor these last 4 years, it's the regular annual opinion poll we do in which Londoners say they like the diversity. Not that they tolerate their different neighbour, they welcome it. It's what they enjoy about being in the city. And the strongest angle we will be bidding for with the Olympics is to say 300 languages spoken in the city. Whatever team comes, and there's 200 teams would come if we win, all of them will find a community here to welcome them. All of them will feel safe on the streets, and that cannot be said of all the great world cities. Let me start by being honest. If you haven't enjoyed what I've been doing in the last 4 years, don't vote for me, because I'm not changing. There'll be more largely of the same. And it would be quite ridiculous to come along after 4 years and suddenly say, well, I'm doing something totally different. If I can get the money from government and if we overcome all the legal hurdles, I would like to extend the congestion charge zone into West London. even more since we saw the remarkable reduction in pollutants, the killers, nitrous oxides and particulates, which are now, of course, we saw yesterday linked to infant cot death syndrome, down 12% inside the zone, CO2 emissions down 20%. Anything that helps to clear or reduce the ghastly photochemical fug
one
hands over London is welcome. We'll continue to expand the buses. We're going to try and take over the former British Rail services from the SRA. But the thing that excites, and we'll carry on with the extra policing rolling out the neighbourhood teams across London, but the thing that excites me most, and I think would be the most significant, is we've bid and got the government signed up to actually expand preschool childcare in the city. Because if we can get proper preschool childcare for every parent that wants it, it is the best way of breaking the cycle of inner city decline and poverty and unemployment. To take kids, socialise them, give them the chance. We're not just talking about for the unemployed or the inner city, but for all Londoners, so they get social interaction as well. We've just started using London Development Agency funds to start funding places. We've now got the government signed up. I do think the government is moving towards making this a key general election manifesto pledge, long overdue. I mean, much of the best of the European and most advanced European nations have had this for decades, and it would transform the quality of life, not just for the kids, but for those parents who actually have a chance then to get back into employment.
Thank you. And now, Steve Norris from the Conservative Party.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and see you. And like Ken, I'm sorry that we weren't able to be here for longer. It literally is just because, you know, you should have been more careful about the day that they were going to launch the Olympics. And incidentally, I'm delighted that Ken tells us we've won it. God, I thought we were only on a shortlist, but that's no, that's great, that's terrific. Rather than repeat what Ken said, if I may, I want to take a huge amount of that as read and just say one word about the whole nature of a civic society and the civic forum and its contribution to it. Because the tragedy for me, and I happen to know that this is a view that my colleagues here share, is that when they say to me, do you know what the result will be on the 10th of June? You know, we'll all make our own predictions, but I'll guarantee you there'll be some margin of error. There is, however, one thing I can pretty well guarantee. I can guarantee that 6 out of 10 Londoners who are eligible to vote won't. I'm less sure whether that figure might be 7 out of 10 Londoners, but, you know, on previous prognoses, that's not impossible. And I think the question we all have to ask ourselves is why, when, as Ken has said, you are actually talking about, in the case of the Greater London Authority, an organisation that touches on some of the most important features of life in a city like this. The ability to walk the streets safely, safety in communities, the ability to get around a massive city like London, by far the largest city in Europe, a city of over 660 square miles and home to 7.5 million people. What about the challenges which the Greater London Authority and Mayor have to address this extraordinary paradox in London, which is that on the one hand we're seen as wealthy and we're certainly net contributors to the nation's economy, and yet, incredibly, we're also the region of the United Kingdom with the highest level of unemployment. 6 of the 10 poorest boroughs in Britain are in London. The issues you're dealing with are enormously significant. And my view is that anything that all of us can do who believe in democracy and believe in the value of participation to encourage people to understand the significance of making a decision for themselves is welcome. You know, one of the least savoury features of this particular contest, and one which, even as I say it, leaves a really bad taste in my mouth, is that the last poll I saw said that such was the apathy among ordinary Londoners that there was actually a risk that the BNP would pick up the 5% they need to guarantee themselves a seat on the London Assembly. There is the prospect that one of the 25 seats on the London Assembly could go to the BNP under the crazy system of voting we've got. Now, I don't know about you, but whoever wins that day, if that does actually transpire, that's going to be a sick day for London, and something that everyone here ought to do everything they can to resist. Now, I only say that because I know I say it for all the candidates, but it just emphasises this enormous significance of participation. And my last thought on participation is just this. When people suggest that, you know, somehow politics is not interesting anymore, just point them to the fact that 1 million people, some say 2 million, were prepared to come out to protest the war in Iraq. Just think of the fact that 500,000 people, for God's sake, came out, you know, to defend the right to slaughter wild animals. God knows, it just shows you what an incredible country it is, but nonetheless, reality is that we are now in the position where, yes, you can get people to be concerned and to be active and to do something, but they have to believe that it matters. They have to believe that it's important enough to them and that what they do can make a difference. And I think the challenge for all of us, not just candidates who stand for public office, whether you agree with them or us or not, but for all of us, is how we engage all those millions of people out there who, on every prognosis we've got, are simply going to ignore the whole process come the 10th of June. That's not just a challenge for however many it is, half a dozen mayoral candidates tonight. It's not just a challenge for the Civic Forum. It's a challenge for every one of us that believes in a healthy society and a healthy London.
Thank you. And next we have Simon Hughes for the Liberal Democrats.
Thank you very much. I'm also very happy to be back in this room again. I've been here many times before. I'm going to start slightly differently. I'm going to describe just over a minute how I came to be in politics at all in London. I was living here, I'd been a student union president in this country, and then when I was abroad as a student for a year, I came back, I settled just off the Oak Kent Road. I was a youth leader and involved in a youth organisation. I got involved in my residents' association, campaigning against the GLC in those days to try to get better facilities for housing for people in South London, making sure the park got developed. And I then got involved in things like the Camberwell Society, which was the local society, and the Bermondsey and Rotherhithe Society too. And for me, that's the way politics in London needs to work. People need to engage in the place they live, their geographical community, and in the other communities of which they're part. And London's a set of villages and towns, as well as a city. And if you live in Ruislip, or if you live in Bethnal Green, all politics is local means the issues that probably provoke you most are in Ruislip and Bethnal Green. And therefore, for me, you start by encouraging people to be really involved locally. And the mayor's job should partly be about that encouragement, building up the villages and the towns and making people feel that they relate to the place they live in and spend their time in. It might be an artificial village or town like a college or a workplace, which is additional. It might be the friendship group or the peer group. But those are the communities. The second thing to say is that there is, however, a job of engaging people in the big London events. So we share things together, like the Olympic bid, which I enthusiastically support, like the football and the cricket and the great sports that London's involved. I'm a Millwall supporter, and I'm looking forward to going on Saturday to the FA Cup. But it didn't stop me being with friends in North London who were recognising that Arsenal were brilliant. And it's about making sure we recognise that actually engaging with people means you meet them where they are. And for many people, sport and art and music and other things and drama are actually much more important than politics. That's where they come in. Third thing to say, it seems to me that the Mayor of London ought to do things very differently from the way that the outgoing Mayor has done things in the last 4 years. Firstly, and there's a list of things. They're all in my manifesto called Simon for Mayor with a 4 number. Very easy to find on the website. The first is that there should be one phone number that you can phone to get London information so that access to information is easier for Londoners. And it works in other cities as diverse as New York and Cairo. Secondly, I would have a business council who I would see representative of all the boroughs. They could see all the papers, all the time, everything that wasn't confidential, commercially confidential. And I'd have a council for the young people and the old people, and one for the voluntary organisations and the faith and belief communities, involving them in the process. I'd make sure that there was much better cooperation with the boroughs. In my borough of Southwark, we now have neighbourhood and community councils with budgets, and they actually take decisions. I would work with them. Instead of two question times a year around London, I have 33 at least, one in every borough, so you can go in and question the mayor in the place where you live, in Merton or in Barnet or wherever it might be. I'd have a citizen's advocate in an office to deal with any complaints against the public service in London, so people got real answers and redress quickly. I'd make sure that people also understood that they could participate in other ways by engaging the mayor on a regular basis locally. And lastly, I'd give a part of the budget for people to decide how they spent. Assembly would put forward three propositions and people would vote. But there are two big issues. If you're safe, you'll be out and about and engaged in London's civic society more. And if transport works well, you'll be out and about and engaged in London's civic society more.
Time.
And the mayor should provide those things as the precondition of the processes of engaging people in the other ways I've described. It is possible, and it really, really can be done, and I'm not pessimistic at all.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go on with the five candidates, and then Jeanette and Eric can join us at the end of that. So next, we have Darren Johnson from the Green Party.
Thank you. Yes, well, there's actually some things of Ken Livingstone's over the last 4 years that I like and are keen to see continue. Congestion charging, I think, has been an absolutely fantastic success. I'd like to see the benefits of that expanded to other communities in London. Why should it just be a small area of central London that gets the benefits of less traffic, less pollution, quieter streets, safer streets, and all the rest of it? I like the bus improvements that we've started to see and want to expand on those. But there have been some things that I think have been a real disappointment in terms of the first 4 years of the GLA. I've been alarmed to see the mayor back massive new road building projects, proposals for a six-lane motorway bridge over the Thames, which will wipe out all of the good work in terms of reducing traffic in central London with a congestion charge. It will wipe out all of that with a massive increase in traffic. I've also been extremely disappointed to see the mayor back new airport expansion, Heathrow Terminal 5 and airport expansion at Stansted or Gatwick. And I think one of the problems is we keep hearing about London as a world city. We're constantly being told that we're a world city. I'm never quite sure what this phrase actually means, but so often it seems to be just a way of trying to convince Londoners to have things that we don't really want. It's like, oh well, we've got to have new runways because we're a world city. We've got to have this six-lane motorway bridge because we're a world city. We've got to demolish half of Spitalfields Market, thriving community market, really popular place, to build more office blocks for city corporations because we're a world city. And I'm saying, well, hang on a minute. I think we need to change the emphasis, our vision for London. We've actually got to make it work for our communities because London is about a city of communities, a city of urban villages. It's not just one sprawling great metropolis that's there to serve the world financial centres. So we've really got to change that emphasis and put the emphasis, I think, really on the local, and that's where engaging with civic societies, engaging with local communities gets really important. I think in transport, basically at the end of the day, whatever forms of transport we're using, we're all moving around far too often. We actually reduce people's overall need to travel. Let's think about providing much more in the way of local businesses, healthy local high streets, local shopping parades, a wide range of local services that you actually need within walking distances from home, healthcare, post offices and so on, and really change that emphasis in terms of reducing people's need to travel, as well as obviously improving public transport. And I will have a lot more money to spend on improving public transport than Ken Livingstone will, because I will be scrapping the road building programme and freeing up £1.2 billion that can be spent on public transport. Just a few other points in terms of engagement. I think in terms of the planning system, at the moment the mayor is prepared to meet developers, and he has his planning meetings in private.
One minute.
The mayor is prepared to meet developers but not meet objectors, not meet community objectors on the major planning proposals that the mayor's responsibility for. I would change that. My planning meetings would be in public, and objectors would have the right to put their case the same as developers. And I also think it's important that we really open up the way we engage with communities in London. We've seen an awful lot of propaganda coming out the GLA. I think Ken Livingstone now has more press officers than Tony Blair. We've seen an awful lot of propaganda, an awful lot of glossy brochures, but I don't think enough in the way of genuine engagement, genuinely getting out there and talking to local communities and letting them have a real say, which is why I'm also totally opposed to Ken Livingstone's idea of scrapping the 32 existing boroughs and creating just five huge, great super boroughs, which I think will be bad for local democracy, bad for local communities, and make civic engagement more difficult rather than easier in this city. So we really do. There's lots of good things that Ken Livingstone has done, but there's an awful lot of bad things, and we need a different vision for London.
Thank you. Right, and finally we have Ram Gudimal from the Christian People's Alliance.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm delighted to be here, and many may be wondering who I am and why it is that I'm running for Mayor of London. I arrived in London in 1967. I came as a refugee with 15 members of my family. We left, we were expelled from East Africa, and we did the only thing we knew to do, and that is buy and sell. So we started life in a corner shop where 15 of us found four bedrooms and began life in London. This was the second migration from the, for the family. 20 years before that, we had to flee from South Asia when there was the partition of India. But to me, London has been a city that has given me an enormous amount. I have been blessed, I have been enriched by this city, and to me, running for mayor and participating in public life in London is about that sense of civic pride to give back to the city and share back with the city what I have received. I, for many years, have been involved in organizations like the Prince's Trust, the Employability Forum that helps refugees and asylum seekers who have the right to work, to find work, because just having the right isn't the answer. The stigma attached is enormous, and that needs working on. Business Links found a chairman in South London. So now I'm running for mayor so that I can have that opportunity to pursue the aims that I have of seeing London as the best and most exciting city in the world at the highest level of London's government. As mayor, I will work to make every Londoner have a sense of being a citizen. You know, there's a difference between having the right to live in a city and belonging to it. I want all Londoners to feel that they belong. And so because it is their city, they will want to contribute and play a part. And they can only do that if they are assured that their contribution is valued. My policies resonate closely with the Civic Charter, especially its five values of civic literacy, cohesion, pride, space, and leadership. I will endorse and facilitate any program that builds relational values, like the Boost Bond that I initiated. It was in my manifesto 4 years ago. I actually implemented it even though I didn't become mayor. Didn't mean I couldn't do it. I did it 2 years ago. It involved bringing together the poorest parts of London and the richest in partnership, each part doing their bit in delivering incubators for business startups, mentoring schemes, addressing homelessness with the resources that the Boost Bond generated. I will endorse and I will support any project like KEMVO, the Center for Ethnic Minority Voluntary Organizations.
1 minute.
Growing leadership in black voluntary organizations by an MBA program for selected leaders, the benefits of which trickle down through the organization. I will use the experience I've gained with the Department of Trade's City Growth Strategies, environmental regeneration charity Air Russia. You just have to go to Southall to see something I saw 30 years ago with tires dumped, cars dumped. Today, with local volunteers and local citizens taking pride in their local community, we have one of the most exciting regenerated projects in London. That's the sort of thing I want right across the capital. mobilizing local communities to do something, which incidentally is very good for business. It attracts inward investment. Apart from the joy of seeing families with little children and others walking through those parks with safety and with pride, I will require developers to prove the case for their projects and will install strict monitoring and controls to prevent waste and needless environmental blight. Existing projects that have not proved their case will be scrapped. And this, by the way, does include the Thames Gateway Bridge, which I want to see the business case for very clearly before just approving it.
Time.
Thank you.
Okay, can I ask Jeanette and Eric to come up onto the platform?
Right.
Jeanette Arnold is representing the Labour Party and Eric Longshaw, the Conservative Party. The format for this evening is that the discussion was to be around civic engagement, civil society, how do Londoners get involved, and so on. And as I said at the beginning, this meeting is jointly being brought together by the London Civic Forum, we've been going for about 4 years, and by the Centre for Civil Society at LSE. And Professor Jude Howell from the centre is here with me, and for just a couple of minutes, she's just going to say something about why we think civil society is important. We're then going to go into a series of questions, which we have grouped, and we have some people to ask the questions. But after the candidates, who will be given 2 minutes each to answer each of these groups of questions, I'll then ask the floor generally whether they have anything they want to add to that particular topic or ask a further question. Okay, so that's the sort of format for this evening. So if I can ask Jude Howell just to say for a couple of minutes, thanks.
Well, welcome everyone to the LSC, and it's wonderful to see so many people here this evening. Unlike the other people on the panel, I am actually not a mayoral candidate, so I'm not here seeking your votes, nor am I trying to score any points. But I just want to say a few words why civil society is important and why this is a very important occasion for Londoners. Civil society is all about citizens coming together to discuss, to debate, and to organise around public concerns. And in a strong and lively and well-functioning democracy, citizens should be actively involved in difficult decisions about how resources are allocated, how money is spent. And they're all difficult decisions that require moral choices, financial choices, political choices, and so on. And so it's very important for Londoners, too, to be involved in deciding how resources are used in the City of London. And the London Civic Forum has been doing a lot of work over the last 4 years to organise a civic charter and to bring people together to discuss public issues and to promote the values of the civic charter, such as civic literacy, civic cohesion, civic pride, civic space, and civic leadership. So today we have the opportunity to discuss with some of the mayoral candidates about their visions of how to involve Londoners more in shaping the future of the city. And as we all know, there is a lot of disillusion with formal politics, with mainstream political parties, and with career politicians. It's not that people are not interested in politics. They are. They want to have a say in how their money is spent, how resources are distributed, and what the principles are for allocating those resources. But we all know that many politicians in today's Britain excel in the art of talking a lot, but say nothing. And people are rather tired of empty talk and false promises. So I do want to urge our mayoral candidates today to speak openly and honestly about why they think it is important for Londoners to be more involved in shaping the future of London. Do Londoners matter for them? Or are they there just to cast their votes next month? And how are they going to involve Londoners? Who should be involved? How are they going to ensure that the diverse communities in London all get a say and not just a vote? How are they going to provide Londoners with the information about a range of issues so that they can take an informed part in discussions and decisions? How are they going to make it possible for Londoners to hold them to account, not 4 years later at the next elections when it comes to voting, but in the interim period of governing? I think what everyone doesn't want is tokenistic consultation, but genuine engagement between politicians and the citizenry. And finally, I would just like to say that what is happening today is not new. The Scottish Civic Forum has been very active engaging with the Scottish Assembly. And thousands of miles away in Latin America, in Brazil, the new government under Lula da Silva has pioneered new forms of civic engagement and in participation in budget making, which has involved all sections of the community in deciding how resources in their cities are going to be used. The example of Porto Alegre in Brazil has inspired citizens across the world. Let's make sure that London too can become an inspiration for other cities in the UK and other countries in the world and become a real, genuine model of civic engagement.
Right, so just so as the candidates know, the way I'm going to do this is to start with a different candidate each time. And I was going to start with Darren, so as I can at least keep track. So I'm going to start on this set of questions with Darren, next time with Simon, and then we'll go around the table just to try to make it fair. And the first set of questions around civic literacy, and I'm going to ask Sandra Flower to ask the... No? Sorry? Okay. So the question I had, so I'll put it from here just to make it clear, is that Londoners should all have the chance to be actively involved in the life of the city. To achieve this, we must provide the resources so that everyone can get involved in developing a public policy and can understand how decision-making takes place. How would you promote active citizenship? And then, do I have Peter Scott President? No? Sorry? Okay, right. Can you ask? Are you happy to ask? There's a microphone around, I think.
Sorry, Peter couldn't make it today, so I'm okay. Here. I'm from a disability rights organisation called DART, and we campaign for accessible transport in London. My question to the mayoral candidates is that currently kind of mechanisms for consultation with disabled people when it comes to kind of organising transport or different kind of areas of life are basically currently very ineffective, and how will the mayoral candidates make sure that disabled people and disabled people's rights are taken into account when planning and organising London.
Okay, thank you. And Betty Evans-Jackass? No? Okay, can we leave it at those two then and start off with Darren? I'm sorry, it's a 2-minute absolute limit on answers.
Okay, please. I'll be nice and brief. I mean, firstly, in terms of civic engagement, I think it's important for the mayor to be getting out there, and certainly my role as an assembly member over the last 4 years. I didn't make it to mayor last time. I did manage to get the consolation prize of a seat on the assembly, but I've made a decision as an assembly member not just to spend all my time in City Hall talking to other politicians in committees, but actually to spend at least a day or two a week getting out and about around London, visiting different groups, talking to different community groups, backing a whole range of different community campaigns, which so often have the right ideas, have the energy, the expertise, but just need that voice and that support and that boost that elected politicians can give, not in terms of taking over the show, but in terms of just giving them real support and acting as a voice for them. So I mean, I very, very much would want to continue that as mayor, and not just spend all my time in an office at City Hall. I mean, I think obviously the Civic Forum is really important, but you actually want to talk to the individual groups as well as just the umbrella organisation. I think it's important that we have a combination of the two. I think also the London Assembly has a key role to play. Some of the committees that the Assembly have been more successful than others at actually engaging local groups. But I think it's pretty pointless if it's just four or five politicians sitting in the committee talking to each other or getting a couple of witnesses from the great and the good of London. We really need to open up the scrutiny process much more. And as mayor or as an Assembly member, I'd be really keen that be pushed. I think another key idea is the idea of community. community councils. I think there is a need for local communities in London to have that directly elected
time,
to have that directly elected voice. And just finally on the disability rights issue, I fully support and give my full backing to the Greater London Disability Manifesto. I think it's vitally important that we've got that action plan, which I would certainly sign up to and use as Mayor of London. But also, if we to get things right, we've got to speak and properly engage with disability organisations. But I think the manifesto is a really useful starting point and should act as that roadmap. But we've got to continue
talking.
Time.
Sorry, okay. Karen. Okay, Simon.
Thank you, Sean. I think, if I may say, I'm going to be a bit more radical than Darren. Firstly, one of the real problems, that it picks up the dark question, Sean, is that consultation is an almost impossible exercise for anybody in London to participate in. If you're lucky enough to know when it starts and you can find the time to respond before it finishes, and then you're listened to, I have to say, you deserve a prize. And I would have a cycle in which every year there was a period for all the things that required consultation. So, for example, the bus service changes and everything else in September to December, there were 3 months, and everybody knew that was the consultation period. And you put the propositions in time, and people all had a chance to participate. Second point. Yes, I support community councils, and in Southwark we have devolved to 8 community councils, and they have budgets. But all the national groups with different languages, as well as all the local groups, need to be part of that process. And everything that comes to the Mayor's office needs to reach them in the language appropriate to those groups around London. Thirdly, I would want the information on the big issues, we were debating the Thames Gateway or the airport, etc., to be provided in a way that wasn't just from the Mayor's office as propaganda, but allowed both arguments to be put, which were objectively agreed. And so they weren't my arguments, they were the arguments, so that people could say, yes, here is a real statement of the case for and against, so that people didn't think there was propaganda. Fourthly, you must be very careful, if Mayor, to avoid the professional lobbyists. Professional lobbyists come to your door very day, and the rich and the well-off, but the disadvantaged found it much more difficult, and you have to proactively reach the people who are outside the loop. And that includes people with disability in language that is other than English, their first language. And lastly, never, never underestimate the involvement of young people. On Saturday in Chingford, a lad in a football shirt, aged 18, was on the pavement. I asked him if he'd ever voted. He said no. He saw my Olympic badge. He saw my Olympic badge, said, could he have one? I said, I'd get him one. Within half an hour, he'd got his mate to phone me on my mobile. He texted me with his address. And he got another mate to phone me saying, is that the mayor? And the reality is it can be done. It really can be done. But it needs a thinking outside the box and new systems, not just new words.
Okay, thanks, Simon. Ram.
I'll tackle the issue raised about access to transport by disabled people. I was on the Better Regulation Task Force, and one of the issues when I talked to local shops was, were you consulted? They said a brown envelope arrived. We didn't have time to even look at it. And before we knew it, there were 2 red lines in front of our shop and we lost our trade. I said, but that was consultation. And they said, I asked the question, was that consultation? They said, that's consultation. I really believe there needs to be a fundamental paradigm shift in terms of understanding what consultation means. It means listening to people. One of the hard cries that I hear from my consultations with those with disabled people is, why can't we have access to transport? 4 years ago, when I had this as a priority in my manifesto, that I would make London's transport system accessible to all disabled people, a journalist, to his disgrace, said to me, but Ram, it will cost too much. I said, it costs a lot more not to have that. All politicians want is short-termism. This is a long-term issue, and maybe there are no short-term votes in this, but I think we owe it as a society with social justice on all our hearts to ensure that we target this as a matter of urgency, get the attitude right, the business case is there. I believe then consultation will be serious consultation where we are listening. Civic engagement, my experience recently I want to share with you that I had at the Kingston Police and Consultative Meeting. To me, there was a model of local active citizenship. I would like to see such consultations and such meetings set up across the capital on a regular basis, covering a wide range of issues. One mayor on his own, and I can't say on her own because at the moment I'm not sure. Oh yes, there is one lady who's running as a mayoral candidate. Two. Thank you. The point is, the point is this: how can we ensure civic engagement just by one person running around London all the time? Leadership from the top, yes, but let's set up models. Look at where good practice is. And I must say, in that meeting, what touched me was when I saw Muslim women walk in at their first public meeting. To me, that is progress. To me, that is the beginning of active citizenship, and I want to see lots more of that.
Thank you. Eric?
On active citizenship, can I say, first of all, I think it will be quite simple for once if actually politicians actually put out a manifesto like we've done and actually will stick to that manifesto, then I think people who actually voted for them might actually know where they stand. The consultation would actually mean consultation. We had an example tonight from Blair's Mayor Livingston, who proudly proclaimed tonight he's going to extend the congestion charge to West London. He's just in the middle of consulting the whole of London on whether to do that, but somehow he's now made the decision. So what has been the point of all that form filling? And too much consultation in existing modern politics isn't consultation. It's just trying to find as many people as you can to hopefully back up the scheme you've already decided to do and committed to do in terms of the money. So it's actually been quite simple and singular in terms of politicians who are elected about what they do. In terms of party politics, it means something like, I lead the Conservative Party at the moment on the Greater London Assembly. We've always had a commitment and will have a commitment that we will not sign, unlike the Labour and Liberal parties, a written deal, which they all still have, which hasn't been proclaimed by Blair's Mayor or indeed by Simon Hughes tonight, but still exists, that those kinds of things, so when people do go to meetings and political parties are there with apparently separate agendas, they will actually be clear that there are separate agendas to be argued about and negotiated about in public and not signed deals in private and stitched up committee meetings, the outcome of which is predetermined. That we will avoid like we've avoided for the past 4 years. In terms of the disabled, I was at the Dart when they announced their manifesto. I think every politician is committed to their manifestos, and those that aren't are going to have to do because the law's coming in. So I think they've got a mighty weapon on their behalf at the moment. In terms of our particular candidate, Steve Norris, his main commitment down this is actually to ensure that at least one, a minimum of one disabled person actually sits on the Transport for London board that runs London's transport
time,
and get rid of the trade union leaders that Livingston has put on there before. Thank you.
Okay, Jeanette.
Okay, well, Ken started by saying what you're going to get in his second 4 years is more on the same, more of what he's given in the first 4 years. No. And so if you look in that first 4 years, what you'll see there was a genuine attempt to engage with Londoners. And the number of stakeholder groups is just amazing. And I defy anybody to come to me with a group of people that have not been consulted with in some way over the last 4 years. The criticism that the mayor has had from colleagues, Eric especially, is that he has spent too much money talking with and communicating with Londoners. So on one hand, you've got politicians saying, oh yes, we should have more talking, we should have more meetings. And on the other hand, you then, when you do that, you're then told, oh, you're, you know, being irresponsible with money. Can I just say, I think one of the things about consultation, and I try my best never to do this, and that is when politicians try to talk about things they have no power over. And you've heard some of this here tonight. Some of the stuff that's been said along this, the mayor has no powers over them. And so what I would like to see, and what I endeavour to do, is actually make sure that the Labour group, and I've done that over the last 4 years and I will do that over the next four, I will ensure that the next Labour mayor stays with the plot, and that is to talk, to consult, to listen to Londoners about transport, because he has that competency. To talk and listen about policing and making the city safe. And it was Londoners who said they were willing to pay the extra for policing, and that's why he dared raise the precept so high. I also want him to talk with Londoners about how we can make our city cleaner, because our city is still the dirtiest city in Europe.
Okay, thank you. Can I... Can I ask if there's anybody now in the meeting who wants to come back on this issue of how do we involve Londoners? There's one there, and one there, and sorry, was a woman at the back? Yeah. Okay. So start over here. Sorry, you sir.
Thank you. Would the platform agree that the existence of large groups of people in London who can't speak English fluently is a barrier to community cohesion, and that as well as getting out leaflets in language other than English, perhaps people should be encouraged to learn English?
Okay, can I just say that when you put a point or ask a question, you are limited to 30 seconds, okay? So I'm not having any speeches from the floor. Sorry, there was somebody over here, and then the lady at the back, and then there's somebody up there.
Actually, one of the speakers, I think the last one, was just talking about the literature that Ken's been giving out over the last few years. I seem to get this thing called The Londoner Through My Door, which doesn't really tell me very much at all, and we're actually paying for it. I'm paying for it, and everyone else is as well. What we actually want is the mayor to go out to each borough to face the people in a question time type scenario, and so that our money is actually not wasted. And I think that Ram made a good point. We do need actually to have more consultative groups out there, but it should be more than just talk. We actually need to properly engage with people, and I think the mayor himself should be accountable in the boroughs regularly, on a regular basis.
Okay, thank you. The lady right at the back there.
I would like to know if this should be done in the borough-wise, so that if the mayor should be visiting the boroughs and letting the boroughs know what is happening in London to engage them in the assembly.
Okay, and then there was somebody up, yes, there.
I'd like to ask the candidates whether they support the forthcoming European Social Forum that's been hosted in London in October. It's going to be a massive gathering against war, privatisation, racism, neoliberalism. I think that'll be an excellent way of involving Londoners, as previous social forums in Mumbai, in Florence, in Paris have. I just think another quick thing, another good way to involve Londoners would be to ensure diversity on the platform, and I think it's outrageous that Respect have been excluded from this platform tonight.
Okay. Can I just say that I think we had a debate with Respect to have a mayoral candidate and you hadn't been invited. There's going to be a change around at 8 o'clock because I think Simon and Darren both have to go and other people are coming up. And if there's a Respect candidate here, I don't think the mayoral candidate is here, I'm going to invite him or her to come up for that last hour to sort of answer that point. There was another gentleman up there, I think.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
You keep on talking about consultation and using our resources well. Fine, we've got the congestion charges. Those are fantastic. I think everyone in here likes the less pollution, the freedom around here. But when were we consulted about the raising of council tax to phenomenal rates that they are now? We really want to be making sure that we're spending the money that we can afford to be spending. The services that we're getting for the amount that we're paying, I don't think is enough for all these raises that we're going to get. Are any of the other candidates going to be making sure that the money is being spent wisely and not just on Ken Livingstone's press offices?
Okay, we've got another hour or so to go, so there'll be other opportunities for people to come in, and if we take too many questions, people aren't going to remember them on the platform. So I'm going to give them about a minute this time to come back on any particular points they want to pick out of that lot, and we'll start with Simon this time.
Yes, thank you very much. I sense there are one or two people here who come with a party allegiance already sorted, but anyway.
A couple of yours.
Firstly, I've made the point very clearly. Yes, the mayor should go to all the boroughs on a regular basis. It doesn't cost any extra money. He can go on the tube or the bus and have a consultation. And I absolutely make clear that I share the view that spending all the money on things that say Mayor of London and have Ken Livingstone's face and have the Londoner, which you never saw in year one, saw once in year two, saw twice in year three, and see every month in year four, is clearly propaganda. Propaganda. And given we're so short of money, we shouldn't be doing that. There are other better things to do. And I would make that objectively assessed so it didn't come from me as propaganda. Yes, we of course should involve the local communities within the local councils. On congestion charge, which I entirely support, there should be a real debate. The mayor's made up his mind, the present mayor. He's going to extend it. He's not listening to the responses to the consultation. And that's a disgraceful attitude. It's clear he's having the consultation before the re-election, arrogantly presuming he's going to be re-elected.
Okay.
And on council tax, yes, some councils have consulted on the amount of council tax. The current mayor has raised council tax by 100% nearly in 4 years. That is not necessary. And if you bring in the private sector and the voluntary sector, you can actually share civic responsibility and save the poorest having to pay a very large amount of money which they can't afford.
Okay, thank you. Ram. Yeah, if I can take the question of council tax, I'm a business person. I have run a large business with 7,000 people in 15 countries turning over hundreds of millions of pounds. I'm appalled at the wastage that I see in the GLA and in the mayor's office. I will do what I can. And I'm running for mayor, but I'm also running for the assembly. I got 4% the last time, 1% more, and I'll be in that assembly as well as a consolation prize. And what I will be doing, you can rest assured, is scrutinizing value for money and not letting projects like the Londoner get away without lots more noise being made. Secondly, on the issue of English, can I tell you, as chairman of the Employability Forum, seeking to help refugees and asylum seekers to work, again, we have David Blunkett, the Home Secretary, pleading that migrants should learn English. I can tell you there are queues of people wanting to learn English. There are queues of teachers wanting to teach English. There ain't no money. Now, I've been campaigning. I've been campaigning with the Home Secretary and with the Treasury to get that money out. And I totally endorse Sir Bernard Crick's report, which calls for a whole range of recommendations involving, including this teaching of English, because it is a barrier. It is a barrier to jobs, quality of life, stepping into that whole civic engagement. And it is a very crucial priority that the mayor, with his influence or her influence, can use and progress. Okay, thank you. Eric?
Large groups can't speak English. Obviously, if people can't speak English, obviously there's got to be programmes for it. I actually live in Hackney and I find that large groups can speak English. The second point about the Londoner, yes, obviously it's part of our manifesto to get rid of it. In fact, it's £2.5 million of your money per year. We want that better devoted to things for removing graffiti in this city rather than actually adding to the litter problem by distributing this leaflet that ends up in many canals in Hackney. But interesting, the Liberals are now against it, when in the first 2 years of Livingstone's mayoralty, the Liberals and Labour voted together for the budget which included the Londoner, but times have changed. Obviously, there's an election coming on. European Social Forum, from our friend up there, I don't think you'd find a Conservative agreeing to some of the things you were talking about. I wasn't quite certain what they were, but I'm willing to have a look at it, but it doesn't sound to me my cup of tea. Congestion charging. Congestion charging from the person up there was asking a question, which I think was Liberal policy to be in favour of the congestion charging as it stands, but not in favour of the extension, so they want it both ways as per usual, and against the doubling of the council tax. The iniquity of this mayoralty has been a 94% increase in council tax. And that what will decide this election is that 60% of Londoners who live in suburban London, who have got nothing from this mayor, absolutely nothing, who's concentrated everything in Zone 1 at the centre, it is those people who will be voting him out and voting for a proper Conservative mayor who will deliver a proper balanced budget that Londoners can afford and will deliver the efficiencies we need and real policemen on real streets in outer London as well as inner London.
Thank you. Jeanette?
I'll say again, the increase that there's been has gone towards paying for the police service. We now have 30,000 police officers. This is an extraordinary record. We've got them because Londoners want them, and Londoners wanted to pay. And that's where the increase has gone. It hasn't gone anywhere else. It's gone into police. Every borough has benefited lately because every borough has now got three community teams made up of police community support officers. I welcome police community support officers because it's the first time in the 175-year history of the police service that we're seeing this range of women and ordinary people being part of the service. So it's local people working with a police service locally. That's to be commended, and that's what Londoners want. And the nonsense about Ken having using the Londoner as some sort of PR exercise. I mean, what would you want him to do? Do you want him to quote liberal politics? All that is in there is about updating Londoners about what he's doing in terms of transport, the LDA, crime, grime, and transport.
And Ken Livingstone.
That's what you time. Will read there. And he's the mayor, so he has to have a picture in this document.
Okay. And Darren?
Firstly, on the speaking English point, yes, it is a barrier, but as Ram says, we need to provide the resources so that there are the educational opportunities, not try and stigmatise and penalise people in the way that David Blunkett has with the language he uses. On the boroughs, of course the mayor has got to get out properly around the boroughs, hold question times in each of the boroughs, and engage with a wide range of groups, not just shove lots of glossy pamphlets out. On the European Social Forum, unlike Eric, I'm very happy to welcome the European Social Forum and discussing issues like dangers of privatisation of war and so on. And if you're concerned about those things, then the obvious thing to do is vote for the Green Party on June the 10th, the main anti-war party in this country. On council tax... I've been concerned about the huge amount of money that's been wasted at City Hall. Ken Livingstone spends more on his propaganda sheet, the Londoner, than on his entire environment budget at City Hall. And he's got responsibilities for air quality, biodiversity, waste and recycling, noise. It just seems absolutely ridiculous. Time. So I would scrap the Londoner and put the money into bread and butter, into frontline services and actually improving the quality of life for Londoners.
Okay, thank you. Right, Simon, who I thought had to go to 8, has said he thinks he can stretch it for a bit, but is it you have to?
I've got an appointment with Sky TV, I'm afraid.
Oh. Mr. Murdoch!
I'll talk to anyone, me, if there's votes in it. Anyway, my glamorous assistant, Shara, will now take over from me. And you can, if you live in Brenton Harrow, make sure you vote for him.
Right, and can we? Do we have the respect candidate who's going to come up? Yeah, thanks. Can I ask you to go down and just let me in? Is that all right?
Fine.
Sorry, go down. What I'm going to do is move on to another topic now and take some questions. When we get to the candidate this time, when we get to the respect candidate, I'm going to give him slightly longer on answering the question because you haven't had a go to begin with. Okay. So we were going to move on to talking about civic cohesion, which is how all the bits of London fit together. And is Richard Lamb here going to ask a question? Or shall I? No? Oh, sorry. Go on. Go ahead.
Okay. Jack Gilbert, Islington and Lesbian Gay Bisexual Transgender Forum and a member of the London Civic Forum Council. Londoners should feel at home and make the best lives possible for themselves in a friendly city that encourages community spirit and recognises the value of diversity. How will each of you as mayor, or how will the mayors you represent, encourage different communities to work together to enable community cohesion? And let me ask you a couple of specific and related points. One of the responsibilities of the mayor is to organise the Pan-London approach to Holocaust Memorial Day, which is what's established... Which was established in order to promote awareness of all the victims of the Nazis, but also all contemporary forms of hatred, and indeed to build community cohesion. What creative approaches do you have to that, and what other ideas do you have in that field?
Thanks. And is Dr. Syed Pasha here? Sorry?
Right at the back.
Yeah, at the back.
Well, I would like to ask about what attitude the new mayor is going to have towards the providing the facilities for the Muslim community. For example, for the planning permission of mosques, community centers, and perhaps even grants to some community activities. And also how the mayor is going to relate to the new development of police searches in homes, using their counter-terrorism measures and harassing the Muslim people. So what the mayor is going to do to stop this harassment of the Muslim people, number one, and how he is going to bring a real justice and equality while promoting diversity.
Thank you. And is Lynn Strother here? Oh, sorry, there.
Thank you. What active steps will the candidates take to value Londoners over 55 and the major contribution they make to a vibrant London? The mayor has already said this is a young city and we want older people recognised, and older people are now classed 50 plus, so that's 50 years of being an older person.
Right, thank you. So I think we're starting with Ram this time.
Yeah. And how long do we have now?
So this is 2 minutes. Right. Back to the 2 minute rule.
Okay, if I can just try and address as many of these questions that have been raised. Firstly, when civic cohesion is used as a term, can I at the outset say I also would like us to keep in mind civic fragility, and that the two are not necessarily just opposite of each other. We need to understand what makes communities fragile, because cohesion then is about addressing those issues as well. It's about understanding the reality of differences between communities and being prepared to bring together as closely as possible these diverse communities. 2 years ago, and we must understand, I better put a context to what I'm going to say, events overseas affect communities in London. When the event took place in Gujarat of a battle between two communities, Hindus and Muslims, it affected life on the streets in London. A group of business people took this step of saying, can we organize a meeting to bring together Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Christians, and people of no faith? We did it. Before the meeting, there was opposition and a suspicion. After the meeting, why haven't we done this kind of thing before? So I would want to encourage that dialogue and that first-hand meeting of the most divergent views without fear. That meeting, incidentally, there was a threat on my life on one of the fundamentalist websites. In terms of the issue of very specifically the Muslim community, let me tell you, sir, there is a serious issue there, but it goes wider to the Asian community at large. Post 9/11, my daughter went to with her friends to a local pub on the 10th, and she was told on the next day, and she was told, "Oi, you're a Muslim, you shouldn't be here." And it shocked me at home when I realized this was happening in our community in Sutton and Cheam. And I was determined then that we would do whatever we could to ensure that all communities are protected and that this is an issue that affects every community. Therefore, what I would say is, when it comes to the Muslim community, be it the Jewish community or any other community of faith or no faith, all communities must have equal access to resources and equal access to what is needed for their protection. Yes, there is a very specific issue of Islamophobia. I think that is a deep regret that has happened in our society. And I would certainly do what I can to redress that. When the hijab issue took place in Paris, the BBC phoned me and said, "Would you, Ram, as a member of the Christian People's Alliance, be prepared to speak out again on the hijab?" I went on the air and said, the ban on the hijab is wrong. Today we see the Sikh community now tackled in France, saying they can't wear their turban. This is a disgrace. It's that kind of thing we must be vigilant to, and in that sense we are co-belligerents in this fight against fascism that is seriously taking its roots, and more than its roots, making advances through France and other places like that. And Le Pen, who I was shocked was allowed here when we didn't have Farrakhan banned, Farrakhan was banned, and Le Pen should have been banned. It's that kind of action that will demonstrate our leaders mean business.
Thank you, Ram. Eric?
If I start with Jack first, obviously our prior commitment, the biggest thing that Steve Norris and Conservatives committed to is actually getting crime down and the fear of crime, which we think affects every community, whatever religion or anybody at the moment in London. It is the big issue so far as we are concerned. That's the priority. That's been the failure, as I said, of Livingstone, the new Labour mayor of London. But But in terms of specifics, in terms of voluntary sector, we are committed in our manifesto to an expansion, particularly in the voluntary sector, in terms of the youth sector. It seems as like madness to be talking about extra policemen, when in fact there's plenty of the youth of this city who have nowhere to go, and plenty of the youth facilities have been run down by all political parties over the past years, and everybody's aware now there's a huge gap out there, and that's got to be addressed. In terms of Holocaust, well, all that I can suggest, it might be useful perhaps if the first mayor, whoever he is elected, actually hosts that at City Hall for once, which I don't believe it has been properly done. In terms of Dr. Pasha, can I say I'm absolutely staggered if there still are problems in terms of planning permissions for mosques. I think every party who sits on here are committed to London's diversity and faith communities, of which the Muslim community is so significant. And in terms of Islamophobia, can I say I've just finished sitting on a scrutiny on the Metropolitan Police Authority into stop and search. The figures that came out there were quite alarming in terms of the increases in stops and searches on young Muslims and the impact of that. And there are quite a few recommendations in terms of better police training, in terms of all kinds of ways of actually addressing the fact that despite the increase in terrorism, we do not want as an excuse yet again to pick on another minority in terms of the police. And those recommendations will be coming out on Thursday, which is a joint cross-party investigation there, and I think there'll be quite powerful stuff there. And finally, in terms of Lynn, can I declare an interest being over 50? And if I get back, then presumably there will be one over 50 back there. I suspect there'll be one or two over 50s back there in terms of the elected side, but you're quite right. In terms of the employment side, it fails miserably at the present moment because it simply is not recognised throughout the system in the fact that older people, shall we say, 50 plus, have a significant contribution yet to play in this city if it is going to be the world dynamic city. Thank you.
Jeanette?
There's a couple of points for me. You heard Ken said that when Londoners are asked what they like about this city, they say it's diversity. Darren asked earlier, what does the term world city mean? Well, for me, world city means, in terms of London, is that this is a place where the peoples of the world have looked to, and they've come here, and they've come here for safety, for economic benefits, and they've come here to join their relatives and friends. And they have come here, and they've found a tolerant community and a society. Rams talked about Paris, but we could also talk about other countries, other cities that are absolutely, totally intolerant, where curfews are a regular thing, where people from ethnic minorities, where people from different sexualities, they are hounded, where they're not allowed to get up and proclaim themselves. And I really do think that sometimes we have to say that it is a good thing to be in London, because you can get up and you can proclaim yourself. I was recently fortunate enough to be invited by my neighbour to his registration ceremony at City Hall, and everybody was in tears. We were in tears because we were in the presence of love. And it doesn't really matter, you know, that it was love of two men for each other. That wasn't the issue. We were there and we were joined and we were celebrating these people's lives. I do think that London is a place where people do get up and celebrate that. But on the other side, let me just say to the gentleman there, for the last 4 years, I've been chair of the Stephen Lawrence Trust. And I think that we've still got so much work to do. And it's let's not forget that it was the bravery of two Londoners who decided that they would stand up and they would seek justice that brought about a whole range of changes. That was Doreen and Neville Lawrence. And I think it beholds us all to actually be saying that we as Londoners can do that. We can get up and witness for each other. And I am not willing to stay silent in the presence of Islamophobia or any terminology or any action that would actually create hatred for the Muslim people. And I don't know any politician sitting at this table who would do that. So Ken Livingstone, you can blame him for many things, but on diversity, on respecting difference, I think you'd have a way to go to find a weakness there.
Okay, thank you. Right, I'm going to welcome Abdurrahman Jaffar to the platform, who is an Assembly candidate for the Respect Party. And as I said, I'll give you slightly longer than the 2 minutes, as you haven't had anything so far, but not more than four.
Good evening.
Okay.
I'm very grateful, Chair. I'm not a mayoral candidate, I'm a candidate for the London list. And our candidate for the mayoral elections is a female. Lindsay German. So we're kind of trumps on diversity when we look at the faces. Also, we've got the most diverse candidates or selection of candidates than any other political party out there. But again, it's not just in form that we try and push diversity, it's in substance. We believe that possibly the greatest element that is tearing apart our society is Islamophobia. It's not just about giving mosques planning committees, but it's about the language that we're using. It's about this dropping of multiculturalism that seems to be endorsed by David Blunkett, even Trevor Phillips. The main political parties are saying there's no more multiculturalism. I think it's a damning indictment on the way politics is progressing this century. And I, for one, as a minority member, am extremely fearful of the future, as well as being a Muslim. We know that the statistics for search and stops are aimed at a Muslim population. And it's scary that we can only seek to address the issue if our child is mistaken for a Muslim, when it was in 1980 that Edward Said said Islamophobia today is the last legitimate form of racial discrimination. Moving on, however, there are also other issues with regards to the vulnerable in our society, and I completely endorse what my friend was saying. We have to push forward the Holocaust issue. Again, I'm just bemused. The way we treat refugees, asylum seekers is now a dirty word for people who are surreptitiously seeking entry into our great land. It is a great land, but I submit that those who are panning about this idea or this exclusion from our society of refugees, again, it's that same process of marginalization of minorities and marginalization of the vulnerable. Pensioners get an extremely raw deal. It's not just because they represent 50% of the voters, but it's because they shouldn't be able to die in winters because they can't afford the extra pound to put in their meter. I say that there's a huge pink elephant sitting in this arena of politics. We're not addressing the big issues. The corporate takeover of Britain, none of us are addressing it. These are real problems that face our society. Behind every social service institute, we know the contingency plans are there. We know that private institutes, private companies and corporate structures are waiting in the sidelines, ready to move in, to put money before people. People are dying because of this. Jarvis, the incident, is just one example of this process of putting money before people. I believe that's something, and this negating of the real issues that face us is the reason why we have what may be an 80% denial or voter non-turnout in these upcoming elections. We're not grasping the issues that really matter to people. The war wasn't just about us expressing a political view. It was about us.
One more minute.
Yes, yep. And I take issue with my friend saying it was the Green Party that organised the anti-war march. It was us. I don't want to be backstabbing him because he's not here. But Lindsay German and George Galloway were the conveners of the meeting. There are other real issues. We don't want a police state like Steve Norris envisages. We want a society where there are more social services, more public caretakers. We want to prevent crime instead of just sweeping up the youngsters from the streets when crime does occur. We want a real strengthened society, a real civic society where people are engaged and are listened to. I don't believe that the way the current established political parties are denying the real issues that confront us, I believe we won't achieve
okay.
this time. Thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, to I've forgotten where I started on this one. Sorry, Dr. Sharar. It's not finally, I don't think. Dr. Sharar Ali from the Green Party, and we're back to the two-minute rule. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for allowing this extension to our mayoral candidate's personal identity as such. Although I was described as, with apologies, although I was described as glamorous, thank you, Darren. I don't know whether the Green Party has a dress code for the candidates as such, but I can assure you I wouldn't have dressed quite like this had I been anticipating this extension to the mayor's personal identity.
Just go for it.
Three points briefly. Holocaust Memorial Day. Whereas I'd be inclined to remember this occasion, we should reflect, the history is the history of thought, as Collingwood has said. I'd be inclined to reflect on this on an annual basis. It really felt like a rather empty exercise to me this year. When you're thinking about the number of people who are dying and the casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan, it really felt like an empty exercise. You'll also hear, with respect to mosques and religious diversity, you'll also hear this word bandied about a lot, let's celebrate diversity. One of the issues that we face, I think, in politics, the disconnectedness to some extent, is the banning around of phrases which are used frequently in the political establishment. And what do we actually mean by celebrating diversity? Does that mean that we're expected or compelled to mix with people who would rather not? Well, there's something called liberal individualism, which allows us to associate with whoever we like. Now, of course, we do live in a tolerant society, and you could say, you could argue that ethnic groupings within those who choose to identify with those particular groupings may also have some degree of obligation. It's far short of assimilation, but a certain degree of integration. So I think Trevor Phillips' rather bold U-turn on this, although he may have expressed himself rather poorly, I do think it's worth entering into this debate. And if we are about participative, intelligent democracy, then we should be adult enough to consider these in a less than politically correct vein. Valuing contributions from older people. I think it's the case, really, that many of us, unless we are...
Very quickly.
Well, let's value older people as individuals.
Thank you. Simon.
Just an overarching point first before addressing the three specifics. If we're going to deliver the housing and the jobs and the regeneration and the infrastructure that we need, then I share the view of some people on the platform that spending what is now £6 billion on going to war against the Commonwealth, against the UN, was a very bad use of resources indeed. And I have no regrets about being on the march and voting with all my colleagues. And Darren and his party were there, but please do us the respect of remembering who else was there. There were many of you probably in the same place at the same time. To do with Jack's points, Jack, I think it's important to remember, of course there's Islamophobia, but there's still an anti-Semitic strain in London too, and other faiths have been on the receiving end. And we should seek to get the respect sorted at a borough level as well as a London-wide level. And we should get the police to be much more effective in prosecuting people for inciting race hatred. Very few prosecutions in London. They don't do enough, and they need to be much tougher. And I believe that there should be London-wide events, but not all held in the middle. They should be shared around London. And the communities, whether the African or the Latin American or the Asian, and the faith communities ought to be hosting those in different parts of London, so the whole city feels engaged. On Dr. Pasha's point, the job of the mayor is to do two things. It's to work, as I've been doing in Parliament, to make the law change so we have an Equality Act that gives everybody an equal status before the law. Christians have a specific protected position. I am a Christian, but we shouldn't. There's no justification for that in a modern society. And we need laws, unlike the anti-terrorist laws, which indirectly discriminate. And we oppose that, and we got concessions. So we've got to be very careful. But also, we must be very careful. This is where my friend Ram and I disagree. I think Christian people's parties are a terrible direction to go down. We don't want to sectoralise people. We don't want the Muslim party and the Hindu party and the Christian party. We need to come together in parties and coalitions. And community is built by coming together, not by breaking ourselves up. And so please don't put Ram at the top of your list. And lastly, in relation to Lynn, we need age discrimination legislation to work. We need to make sure that elders are brought back into our society, and we need to use them often as volunteers post-retirement, as Sydney has done to welcome people to the city. Last word, please, if we're going to have a London that's united, just a thought from somebody who wants to be the unity candidate, why not a London Day once a year when we all celebrate together this great city of which we're all in different ways part?
came for that. Sorry, Ram has suggested to me, as he was directly attacked and named in the last speech, that he should have 30 seconds to come back.
I come from a Hindu family. I've been brought up in the Sikh faith. I've been educated in a Muslim school, and I became a follower of Christ here in London. The bulk of my funding comes from people of other faiths because they respect the values on which I am running this campaign. And if the other parties had any values, then we would see more respect for politicians. It is that breakdown of trust, breakdown of values, and breakdown of believing anything that people say to us that is causing people like a group of people like us to say, hey, it's time we spoke out unashamedly from the values we believe in and want to see promoted in society. Okay. So I think it's important I make that point. Thank you.
What I'm going to suggest is that as people are starting to leave, that we move on to the final topic. And the final topic is actually one where we want to discuss a vision for London. How is it that we actually see London, and what vision for London do the candidates have? And I'm going to invite a number of questions and sort of open questions from people or comments on that. And then I'm going to finish up by allowing each of the candidates 3 minutes at the end to do their summing up and to comment on that particular issue about a vision for London, okay? So I'm going to just take some general questions on that, maybe half a dozen or so, and then I'm going to come back to the candidates. So I've got one there, one there, one there, one there, one there. Right, let's just, I'm sorry, okay. Let's, and sorry, in order to get through this, the shorter your question is, the more time we have for everybody else. Sorry, there.
Thank you very much, Chair. We were talking about the civic cohesion and equality and so on. Incidentally, local racial equality councils are doing a thankless job for the benefit of the underprivileged and elderly people up and down the country. And unfortunately, virtually all the racial equality councils are under threat. And what is your view in this matter for this thankless job you are doing? I would also like to ask another question, which I already presented. Unfortunately, Sean didn't pay much attention to my question. If you are aware of the existence of the standards in public life, how you would attempt to ameliorate inequalities in public services, bearing in mind that a huge valuable human resources are wasted because of the biased recruitment practice?
Okay.
Thank you.
Can we, right, sorry, you there, yes, I'll just go across.
Hi there, I'm from the Respect Coalition as well. My question is that, I don't know if people know that, but George Bush's father is in London at the moment, and he sold tickets for £1,000 each to raise money for his son's re-election campaign. So my question is that what will all of the candidates do should George Bush return to London on the kind of state visit that he did last year, should his daddy get him enough money to get him re-elected?
So, okay, can I ask people to stick to the question, which is about a vision for London, which is what we're trying to talk about. All right, I'm going to go round like this and then come up to the top. Sorry, I'm getting too many hands now, I'm afraid. So, very, very quickly, please,
okay,
points.
Okay, I'm Rita Grothendoss, and I want to know about trust and accountability, because I think Londoners are being squeezed. I agree that the question that came from the top about the unsustainability of the cost to us of all these bills and the increases. So it is a question of trust and responsibility and accountability. We're not treated as adults. This is, I think John Denham said today about the tax credits being very, they create dependency. And I feel we're being treated as dependents when we're not.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to take one just there, and then I'm going to go up into the gallery.
Declaration of interest, Green Party candidate for East London, end of story.
Green.
Housing has been mentioned once tonight. I think it's an absolute disgrace that means sort of the housing has not been sort of been more prominent in this campaign. It has been said as one of the causes that has led to sort of voter apathy. And if I can just say, I mean, sir, basically, housing is one of the most important issues in housing as far as I'm concerned. As I did my dissertation on affordable housing in London, and the conclusion I came to was that, I mean, sir, basically, we've lost the battle. And I want to see housing, sir, put on the agenda, get a higher agenda. And finally, and I don't care, I mean, what party does it, I mean, but the Green Party does.
I'm not having any party politicals from the floor. You're asking questions to the candidates.
I don't wish to. Housing has to be given more priority, and it's as simple as that.
Fine, thanks. Can I go up into the gallery there? Gentleman at the... Sorry, I'll take the one ray at the back up there, then the gentleman in the middle, and then the gentleman over there, and then we'll come back to the candidates.
I'm Andy Megani. I've got a question to ask with regard to the cohesive society. And the question part will come at the bottom. You know, there's about five lines. The question is intended to be a challenging question for Simon Hughes and Eric Olrenshaw, because the other candidates might not be able to play a part because they haven't got any representation in Parliament. Both of them have talked about the all-inclusive society, but the Liberal Democrats or the Tories have done nothing to guarantee the success of achieving an all-inclusive society. There are approximately 40% ethnic minorities in London. They pay taxes, they pay VAT, council tax, and business rates, but sadly, no representation. That is disgraceful. You and Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives can ensure that by having MPs in safe seats, which the Labour has done, but you've done absolutely nothing to, you know, have ethnic minorities in the Parliament. As against that, Ken Livingstone has shown his support for all inclusion in society in thought, word, and deed. Please comment.
Okay, and there's a gentleman in the middle there.
Okay, one of the most encouraging things to come out of the Mayor of London in the first term of office has been the progress on implementing the recommendations of the McPherson report in relation to the Metropolitan Police. And one of the most worrying things to appear recently has been the attacks on the McPherson report and the reforms of the police service under the guise of people being anti-political correctness. Will the candidates on the panel condemn this? And will they also support the continuation of the Respect Festival as a symbol of multicultural London, which I think is probably a much better idea than a London Day, really, as a celebration of our diversity?
Thanks. And then there's a gentleman up here at the back.
Thanks. Can I just congratulate the representative from the Green Party on his shirt? You should wear that more often. What are you going to do about the tube?
Okay, what I'm going to do now is to ask each of the candidates to wrap all those diverse points up and to answer them, and also try to present to us, all in 3 minutes, their vision for London. And actually, Eric should have gone first, but because Simon has to go, he's happy to let Simon go first. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sean and Eric. Quickly, the tube, which is the most specific. The most urgent things are to make it more reliable and to make it less congested. To make it more reliable, you have to bring forward the work programme, and that means you will have to take bold decisions to close down certain lines for a week in the summer holidays, for example, so that you can get lots of maintenance done, which you can't do if you do 4 hours a night. And I've talked to the advisers, and they say that's the way to get the signalling, the tracks, the maintenance done more quickly, and therefore make reliability come more quickly. On congestion, apart from encouraging people by better walking and cycling provision and other things, the best way I have found for immediate action is to lower the fares before 7:30 in the morning to encourage people who can get in early to have an incentive to go earlier to take some of the pressure off the peak hour. So those are two specifics. On race equality councils, yes, I see it as the mayor's job to, with the Assembly, make sure that every borough has an effective, functioning and supportive one. That's by influence rather than by diktat. To answer the question from our Respect colleague on the state visits should be paid for by governments, not by local councils, and the Met Police should not have to pay for policing when Mr Bush or anybody like them come to London. That should be paid out of the taxpayer if they come. On the question from our friend there, it's wrong, of course, to say that the Conservatives or us have done nothing. That's completely wrong. We had the first non-white Member of Parliament ever as the Liberal Party 100 years ago, in London. Member of Parliament in London, in Finsbury. We have the first non-white president of our party, Navneet Dholakia, Asian president, in Parliament, in the House of Lords. Yes, at the moment, it's true that we don't have members of Parliament in the Commons who are from the black and minority communities. We've just selected three candidates in London seats, Tower Hamlets, Walthamstow, Leighton, all non-white candidates,
and are likely to select several more in other parts of London. So watch this space, my friend. You won't even have to think about a criticism in the years to come. And I've come from a borough where the outgoing mayor is a Sierra Leonean refugee, the first black African mayor of Southwark who was a Liberal Democrat, and I'm very proud of that. Last point generally to wrap up. My vision for London, we have a tale of two cities in this city. And the reason I'm not a Tory, and the reason I'm not a Labour Party member, is that they have not delivered a more united London. The gap between the rich and the poor has widened. The very rich are getting much richer. They have two homes or three homes. The very poor, and it's our friend's point over there, are still not having the housing we should deliver. We have fewer houses built in London, affordable houses, in the last full year than in the first year of the Labour government. And that is a disgrace for a Labour Party and for socialism, which Ken has now joined. And he's the Labour candidate. You can't vote Ken without voting Labour. And if you vote Labour, it's in the Labour column. Mr. Blair adds it up, and it endorses Labour policy. And I hope everybody remembers that on the 10th of June. And the last point is, if you want... No, it's true. It's absolutely true. You can't vote Ken without voting Labour. And you vote to endorse the Labour government if you vote for the Labour candidate. And he did London no service by ceasing to be an independent and rejoining a party that is going rapidly out of favour in London as elsewhere in the country. And I hope people here will vote for a candidate who's in nobody's pocket, a candidate who believes that we need a new mayor, not one of the old parties who have run London for the last 25 years for a greater London, and who can unite the city. And that's what London needs more than all. Unite for social justice, redistribute wealth, create opportunity, and give every citizen a stake in the future of this great, great city.
Thank you. Okay.
And apologies that I have to run away. I love you all.
Okay. I'm now going to go to Eric, who should have started this round.
I'm trying to think who Simon had in mind as the new mayor of London, but I'll think about that later. Can I go to the gentleman over there on local racial equality councils? I think you're right. I think it's all part of the decline of funding in terms of the voluntary sector, which is affected from borough councils and from the mayor in this. And we've got to get back to something. The whole purpose of the civic forum is the involvement I see as the voluntary sector. And the voluntary sector in this city, whatever party, whatever borough, has been badly let down and needs some support in terms of getting it moving. In terms of George Bush, I can remember I was actually a graduate of this university. I can remember the Vietnam demonstration in the 70s. I was a good Tory then. I didn't go on it. And I wouldn't go on your demonstration this time for the same reason, that I don't want all those policemen tied up trying to keep demonstrators away from a president when actually they should be chasing criminals in places like Hackney, where I actually live. But fine, if you want to demonstrate, demonstrate. Actually, it'll have very little impact, but I hope you'll allow the police to get on with their business so there's not too many of them involved in doing that. In terms of trust and accountability from Rita, I think, again, perfectly right. I've talked about this massive increase in council tax for what most people in London are asking and trying to look for. They've been stung left, right and centre and got precious little for it, whereas crime and the fear of crime has just gone on and on and on. In terms of cohesiveness, what Simon said, yes, we have also now selected, and this is the Tory party, remember, which selected the first Jewish prime minister, the first woman prime minister in this country. So we don't have a bad record, actually. And at the present moment, people like Syed Kamal, who's on our MEP list in London, Adam Afray, who's actually a candidate in Windsor, and quite a few others. So you'll be seeing some about in terms of that. And in general terms, the Tube, the mayor... A big criticism, obviously, of this new Blair mayor called Livingstone is that he spent £100 million trying to fight the very government he then rejoined over PPP, so he lost all that money, which could have been spent on the tubes. And for once, I'll agree with the Liberal, Simon, it is going to take years to get that tube system right. Do not believe any politician who tells you differently. In fact, the engineers are telling us they'll have to close huge sections of it, like Central Line, Piccadilly Line, for months. And London's got to prepare itself if it wants to face that, but we've got to face that to get a modern transport system. And I think that virtually finishes up in terms of a vision. I want a mayor for London, which is all of London, not just Zone 1, not just the glitterati and the literati in the centre of London, but actually represents the 60% of Londoners who live in suburban London who have got a poor deal by this mayor and want to see something done in their areas, which are suffering just as much decline as anywhere else.
Thank you. Jeanette?
Okay, well, my vision for London is a London that is more patient, more tolerant, more cleaner, that we can move around in, that we have adequate policing, that our public service is of a standard befitting the city, and that the workers are paid a decent wage. Now, all that takes money, So I want, my vision is that we as politicians actually are clear and are truthful about what it is we're putting to people so that they can make better decisions, so that they can understand the decisions that are being made. And let me just talk about housing. The GLA did not come with any powers about housing. That is a fault in the GLA Act. It's unfinished business. I, like many other Labour Party members, am looking forward to getting the same that is now currently in the other assembly bills. So the bill that gives other assemblies in England housing and health and other responsibilities. I think I would like to see those responsibilities for London. But what we have done is we have now decided to sit with the government on the London Housing Board. And it's through that organisation that we're looking. It is a quango, but it's a starting point. And what we're saying is we've got to get houses and we've got to work with the public sector and we've got to get money. Don't harangue me for a moment.
Sorry, can you let her finish?
Harangue me afterwards. And so what we're saying is we need money to get the houses built so that everybody can have a decent house to live in. That for me is the priority. And I'd also talk, when you talked about social cohesion, I absolutely think that one of the things that we can do about social cohesion is we can celebrate difference. And I think the Respect Festival that takes place, although Eric might not like it and think we're spending too much money on it.
In the centre.
When you bring people together to celebrate their difference, when you bring them together in that sort of environment, I think then you're working towards better social cohesion. And lastly, can I just talk about George Bush? The only thing I would say is that I would like to see him in London without the police support, because I'm sure that Londoners would be able to deal with George Bush.
Okay, thank you, Jeanette. Abdurrahman.
Over 99,000 homes were left empty last year in the possession of banks and building societies, and they were left empty because there's some loophole where they get a lot of money if there are empty houses. Tax businesses to provide more housing, tax mortgages, which those aimed at second home ownership who buy to rent. We need to do a lot more to provide real social housing to make up for the lack of workers that we have in London. It's an essential issue, I agree. And even though we don't have the powers to in the London Assembly, we certainly should be pushing for those and pushing a lot more harder than the current regime would have us. But trust and accountability, I'll move on to that later. Creating dependency, this back to work scheme. Thankfully, I escaped that and I'm now a barrister. We've got people that are stuck in social positions, stuck at the lower rung of the social ladder because of these short-term gimmicky policies for jobs. Again, this is something we should all be pushing for, whether it's London or nationally. With regard to the Respect Festival, well, if you want to ask any more questions of us, we'll probably be having the largest number of candidates at that festival than anyone else, for obvious reasons. So we're all for that. Future vision of London is one where we're not scared and where we don't have to be scared, is where we're a just society. And it's a society where you don't get 2 million people marching, but you get 7 million Londoners marching, because then we have a society that care about not just local politics, but we realise that the child who's dying through lack of water, one of the 20,000 that dies daily, is part and parcel of our neighbourhood. Marching against Bush's visit is a symbolic representation of an awareness that we all have that we need to fight one of the greatest threats posing our environment, opposing democracy in its thrust for this neoliberal project that's been unleashed since the 1970s. That's what marching against Bush means. It means marching for the people and not for money.
Thank you. Okay.
Oh, sorry, tubes. £1. We have a £1 tube fare for all of London.
Okay,
that's that. Great.
We've done that. We've been there.
Cheryl? Thank you, Chair. I make that seven and a half questions and the vision of London in 3 minutes, so I may have to leave some out. Firstly, standards in public life. I think this really comes down to our political culture and our political system. Unfortunately, we're faced with often having to vote for a party. The trouble is with that, when you have candidates standing on party platforms, there may from time to time come a point when their personal opinion diverges from the party position. What do they say in such circumstances? I mean, an example might be, do I wish to tell my fellow Green Party candidate, please don't heckle candidates on stage?
Yeah, well, tell him. You can tell him.
Jeanette, please. So I think we need to be where to draw the balance, and it needs to be struck, okay? And it's a big problem. Should George W. Bush be allowed back into this country? Well, yes, we should, and we should stop preventing others from protesting. If we can spend an as yet undeclared amount on an Iraq war, we can spend a little bit on policing of such an event. As it happens, I was rather disappointed that those people who did march found it not within themselves to do a little bit more when war started. For example, there was all talk about not going into work and whatnot. But really, we do need within ourselves to really examine whether the issues are that important that we need to sacrifice or even risk the possibility of dismissal. 19th November 2003, Colin Powell and others were actually planning to visit the University of London. I wrote a letter which got published. I did a couple of other stunts as well. I was threatened with dismissal by the University of London. Came through that, fortunately. But basically, it's very important that if there had been more people in the university who were supporting me, not just from behind the scenes, but coming out overtly and saying, look, Shara was right, and what he did we agree with, and the university needs to think again before allowing these warmongers into the university, which they're just going to use as a photo op. Okay, let's be real. Trust and accountability. I've already said a little bit about this. Well, the opposite of a vision, I would say, is a bit of a nightmare scenario society. And we've got a creeping type of nightmare, actually, through New Labour and Blunkett. ID cards. Now, most people I ask aren't actually very happy about having them. So we always refer to a poll when actually most people you ask aren't happy about having them, don't we? ID cards is really a very draconian measure. I mean, most people, I like to identify people through facial recognition. Facial recognition is a very good way of instilling trust and commonality between people. We need to get away from an atomized society where, without actually having able to produce a piece of documentation, there is a burden. There is a burden of proof is that you're innocent until proven guilty. So that's very important.
Just another few seconds.
My vision of society is a less hierarchic society, more egalitarian society, one in which people who are actually working much harder than the people, their managers who get credit for it, are paid as much or a fair wage. Think about your average pavement worker shifting slabs, many slabs in 2 hours. He does more work than many captains of industry do in a year, and yet he's not being paid what he deserves.
Okay, thank you. And finally, Ram?
If I can just encompass my remarks by trying to share with you the thrust of what my manifesto for London is about. My manifesto is called A Passion for London. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm passionate for London. In the opening pages it says, we believe that under God, the well-being of society should be judged more by the quality of human relationships than by material attainments, more by the richness of human lives than by the abundance of possessions. For me, the trust and accountability issue that was raised is fundamental, I believe, to what we can offer in London, good government. I offer independence from the main parties, a reputation for seeking the highest ethical standards, a proven business capability, and a reputation as someone who really cares about London as a world-class city, its education standards, and the safety of those who live in it. I will take a straight-talking, tough approach to running London as a social entrepreneur.
I want the restoration of our pride in London as a world-class city. I want a city that will work without everything breaking down late and dirty. It will be a city that is well served by its schools, teaching first and foremost values. As mayor, I will act as the catalyst to ensure that the right policies are chosen. There are action plans to deliver them and accountability for the expenditure of the money required. As mayor, I will exercise strong leadership in cutting back on the poor management and waste of the Greater London Authority and ensure that both business and citizens get value for money. I will cancel projects if the case is not proven, such as the £400 million Thames Gateway Bridge. Working with central government, I will seek a fairer share of national tax revenues for London and a reform of how taxes are raised in the capital. Ken Livingstone has imposed an 80% increase in the precept on the council tax through the boroughs in the past 3 years. Londoners are right to oppose such tax rises when the evidence is that budgets are not being managed efficiently and projects are wasting scarce resources. The challenges facing London will not be solved in 4 years. Seeing vital infrastructure and strategic projects through to completion requires a business acumen that so few politicians have. It will require a different approach to the government of London. The London plan is flawed, even misdirected in a number of ways. And my main achievement will be to remedy this. First and foremost is the central problem of traffic congestion, especially in middle and outer London. For millions of journeys, the traveller has no alternative to the car. My campaign for an outer London and inner city coach system will replace a substantial number of outer London coach journeys. Secondly, much of London's private and public housing, and sir, I agree with you, having lived with 15 people in 4 bedrooms right at the bottom of the pile, it's a disgrace that in the 21st century, in 2004, I still knock at doors, and I was there yesterday morning in the most deprived community in London, launching my manifesto, where I was witness to and present in such accommodation. A disgrace. I will measure my mayoralty by how far the situation is improved. Londoners should not live in sub-decent housing. I want to see London become a more sustainable and low-energy city. And my mayoralty will not look for marginal cuts, but a decrease of about a third in energy use. Energy costs will rise over the period of the next mayoralty. Not only will cutting use of natural resources make London better off, we owe it to the post-Kyoto world. In the end, it is people's lifestyles and their consumer choices which will make the difference to the social ecology of London as well as the natural one. Where I've been disappointed with the main parties is 4 years ago we at least had some minority candidates shortlisted. This time round, in the main parties, not even one. That is a step backwards and it is a disgrace. And the gentleman who raised the question, I agree with your point that you made. Thank you.
Right, I'm going to finish it there because we wouldn't have time for another round with the candidates. I'd like to thank all the candidates for coming and giving of their time. I'd like to thank LSE for hosting us this evening. And I think the message from us in the Civic Forum and from LSE is that we hope that people will continue to be engaged with political life and that we hope that we will continue to be engaged with the candidates, whether they're elected or not, over the next 4 years in making London a better place to live in. Thank you all very much.